Hello, and welcome to The Reading Life, WWNO's weekly look at the New Orleans literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. This week, I'll be talking with Eric Bookhart, editor of Inventing Reality, New Orleans Visionary Photography, and his publisher and subject, photographer Josephine Sacabo. We'll also hear from Philip Collier, whose gorgeous new book is Philip Collier's Making New Orleans Products Past and Present. And we'll meet the writers of a charming new children's book, What the Sleepy Animals Do at the Audubon Zoo, Ryan Murphy and Grace Millsaps. My first guests are two very well-known figures on the New Orleans art scene. Eric Bookhart is a longtime art critic for Gambit, and photographer Josephine Sacabo is known for her gorgeous and distinctive work, often inspired by literature. And now she's begun Luna Press, a publishing company, with her husband Dalt Wonk. Eric and Josephine are here to talk about the latest book from Luna Press, Inventing Reality, New Orleans Visionary Photography. Eric is the editor, and Josephine, one of the subjects of the book, as well as its publisher. Welcome back to The Reading Life, Josephine.
Thank you.
And Eric, so nice to meet you.
Good to be here.
This is such a gorgeous look at the contemporary New Orleans photography scene. So how did this project get started? Whose idea was it?
One of the things that we wanted to do with Luna Press was to include more people in the endeavors. And over the last, say, maybe year and a half, one of the things that kept happening to me is that every time I would go to a photography exhibit, particularly down in the St. Claude area or in the Bywater, I would see fantastic work. And every time I think, my God, you know, this is an unusual experience to go into a gallery over and over and be really impressed by the work. And most of it was being done by people who, you know, they were young, up-and-coming photographers. And so I thought, I've really felt like there was a kind of a renaissance going on in photography. And then I thought, well, you know, that would be a great book for us to do. A book about this extraordinary thing that I already felt was happening in the New Orleans photography community. I didn't want to be the one to actually curate the book. So I thought, well, maybe we could get Eric to do it. Eric being not only a wonderful art critic, but also a photographer.
Yes.
So when I talked to him and proposed this to him, I knew that he would go for it. So that was basically the reason and how it got started.
So Eric, over to you. How did this work? How many portfolios did you look at?
Oh, was it like hundreds of images that came in? It was an open call because it was, the book is a fundraiser for Photo Enola, the big photography annual extravaganza here. So there's a slew of just hundreds of images came in. And so it was really quite overwhelming. And at first I thought, yeah, this is crazy. But then after looking at things over and over and over again, there began to be a pattern that was emerging of a mixture of some very well-known and some almost unknown photographers whose photographs seemed to really, really work well together. And so it was really a matter of finding the strongest photographs that could work as a cohesive presentation. So it's like curating an art show, really.
So you think that the photographers in this book all belong to this idea of visionary photography, and that involves several things like elements of surrealism or magic realism, some engagement with the landscape very often, sometimes inspiration from literature, and also engagement with the history of photography itself, which I found fascinating. So talk a little bit about the technical processes that these artists use.
Well, it's a whole variety, a wide range of things. What I found surprising, though, is the number of what you might call archaic processes, like tintypes and photogravures, which Josephine is so well known for her photogravures, but others as well. Meg Turner did some wonderful work. And a lot of tintypes, including some very large tintypes, which involves making a camera oscura out of a big enclosure. And it's quite elaborate. And then you get the final result right there as the picture is being produced. But then also the odd thing about that was that so many of the people working in the most archaic processes were some of the youngest and most emerging photographers. And we have this wonderful subcurrent of people who come from alternative anarchistic backgrounds, alternative communities. You know, I'm thinking of Dinah DeNova and Nicola Krebel and these really wonderful subcurrent cultures that are below the radar in the community. And so the most avant-garde people were producing work from the most archaic techniques.
What an amazing combination. Remember, we're describing a photography book for radio, which is always very hard. Yeah. So let's talk about some of the images. For example, Meg Turner's work. I found that really fascinating to look at.
Yeah, she does photogravures and other alternative techniques. And she's somebody from the Boston area originally, but she has this great feel for vintage industrial landscapes. And so she did this wonderful series on the old Market Street power station, which is pure steampunk gothic structure, you know. And a lot of people have photographed that, but I don't know if it has to do with just the lengthiness of the process of using these archaic cameras and archaic techniques, the exact opposite of digital instantaneity. But her work just has this very deep, soulful quality that it seems to suggest such a rapport with these old vintage relics from a century ago that used to produce the electricity for the city. Mm-hmm. So even though a lot of people have done this subject, her stuff just really resonated.
Well, and there's something that's so quintessentially New Orleans about getting to go inside that power station, which is so much fun. You know, it's just, and you drive by there every day, it makes you look at it in a new way.
Yeah, she's another one of the up-and-coming younger photographers whose approach is very guerrilla. You know, she had to get in there and deal with security guards and whatever. But the results are spectacular.
Now, Josephine, you know some of the works in this book are inspired by literature, and yours, Josephine, are inspired by the writing of Clarice Lispector. And I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about that source of inspiration for you.
Well, I discovered her a few years ago, but I wasn't ready for her yet. And then this last year, I've spent about a year and a half working on a series called Beyond Thought, which is actually a quote from her. And in fact, the title of this book, Inventing Reality, comes from a line of hers in which she says that she invents reality. And she has been a huge inspiration to me. She's what's considered a modernist novelist in that her work is very interiorized and it's almost like monologues. Beautiful, beautiful work. And so I did a series of trying to find visual equivalents for her texts. And the photographs of mine that are in this book were done in response to a question that she asks in one of her books. She says, "And as for music, after it's played, where does it go?" And I thought that was just one of the most astounding questions that I'd ever heard. Mm-hmm. Because, in fact, where does it go? So that set me off on a whole. And what's excerpted from, there's like, I think, 5 images in here, but that's a longer segment. But I'm doing a book in my own mind as a homage to all the ways that her language has helped me see mm-hmm. things and think about things that would never have occurred to me. And so that is a huge source of inspiration.
She's your muse.
She's my muse far and away right now. I tend to have these muse romances,
yes,
but she's the one of the moment for sure.
She's a great one, and she's not nearly well enough known still.
No, she's hardly known at all. Here in Brazil, she's like a national, but she's still pretty obscure in this country, but she's just wonderful.
We'll work on that.
Please.
Now, Eric, so many of these photographs to me seem to be so deeply mysterious. Don't you think that's a lot of what draws these people together, the mystery at the heart of these pictures?
Yeah, I think so. I think so many of them, I'm a native, but so many of the photographers, including Josephine, originally came from somewhere else. And I think there's something about New Orleans that, as a city of profound mystery, attracts its own. You know, it attracts people who are attuned to the mysteries of the city, which are really the mysteries of the world and the universe, because it's such an international city when you trace its origins. So I think that in a way, all of them are doing their version of what it is about this city and this region that inspires them to create.
And you are really one of the forefathers of all this with that wonderful book of yours, The Geopsychic Wonders of New Orleans.
Oh, thank you.
That was such a fun book.
But I think that was an early attempt to get to the mystery of the city and how the city itself, collaborating either knowingly or unwittingly with the people who live here, creates these vernacular architectural wonders that are works of art. I regard them all as sculpture, mysterious self-arising sculpture. And it's, who knows, something in the air here, something about the nature of the landscape, the power of nature here. And you put it together with people who originate from, we know the usual, you know, cliches about the French, the Spanish, the Irish, the Germans, Sicilians who settled here, but then people from Vietnam and all parts of Africa. You just have such an extraordinary melting pot. And the city has always been like that. So you weave all these cultural tangents together with the very mysterious and powerful forces of nature here. And you end up with so many things that can inspire or even provoke people to have to deal with it creatively.
And out of all this, we make a community.
A real cohesive community.
And it's so interesting to see books like this, the efforts of Luna Press kind of forging this photographic community right now of so many different kinds of photographers. And the range in this book is one of the things that's most appealing. So much different work is really lovely. We've been talking with Eric Bookhart and Josephine Sacabo, creators of the gorgeous new book, Inventing Reality, New Orleans Visionary Photography. Thanks so much, you two.
Thank you.
Philip Collier knows how to make a beautiful book. He's the creator of Mixing New Orleans, Drinks and Cocktails, Missing New Orleans, and now he's back with another colorful, fascinating history, Philip Collier's Making New Orleans Products Past and Present. It's a gorgeous look at our city's history through the stories and images of things that were made here, from Barks Root Beer to Higgins Boats, gorgeous sheet music and literary journals such as The Outsider and The Double Dealer. It's a visual odyssey that is purely delightful and unforgettable. Philip Collier, welcome to The Reading Life.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, it's not just The Reading Life with this book, it's The Looking Life,
right.
You know, taking your time with this book. Now, you say that you were adopted by New Orleans in 1975. So how did that happen?
I had a job opportunity in New Orleans. I came down and just happened to be the jazz festival was going on. And I think I was hoodwinked into thinking it was like that all the time. So, and it is sort of, but I went back to Birmingham, packed up my stuff and moved to New Orleans.
You're one of those.
At least one of them.
At least you went back for your stuff.
Right.
You didn't just stay. Now, for this book, you assembled a really amazing team of people to work with you.
I did.
Talk about that. Those writers.
First of all, I'm not a writer. I'm a graphic designer. I'm pretty good at research, but I'm not good at writing, not good at grammar. So I had my daughter, Ricky, who had just graduated from college. She helped me with the writing of it. And then I also had 12 or 13 other writers help me out.
And some of them are just authorities on all things New Orleans. Like Liz Williams writes that wonderful chapter on cupboards and cuisine.
She came on board. She was the first writer to accept the challenge to write a chapter introduction. Then I had Nick Mueller from the World War II Museum to write the chapter on vessels and boats and transportation.
And then my neighbor, Wayne Curtis, is in this book, too.
Yeah, Wayne's the best. He is a cocktail writer for national magazines, and he is just wonderful.
And his chapter is the very decadent spirits and smoke.
Right.
A lot of cigars in New Orleans,
yeah,
huh?
That was an amazing thing I found out, that you always think of Tampa being the cigar capital of the United States. It was New Orleans back in the 1890s when cigar smoking was at its highest, you know, at its zenith.
Mm-hmm. And then Bill Rao did the chapter on antiques.
He did a great job.
And then John McGill from the Historic New Orleans Collection writes about coffee and chicory, which, of course, are New Orleans staples.
Yeah, it is. And that was maybe the first thing that sort of got me into this book. And it sort of started out as a label book. I think most people have seen how many coffee labels. They're beautiful. And maybe I want to talk about Wally Printing Company.
Yes.
Everybody sees these labels that are around for sale as postcards and such. Wally Printing Company did all of those labels. they're still around, but back in their heyday, there was this one guy, Frederick von Ehren, who was the head designer at Wally Printing Company. And the great story about him is that he worked there until he was 90 years old, and they fired him. He had a lawsuit against Wally to get his job back, lost, but would sneak in at night. This is when he was like 90-something years old, would sneak in at night through a window and work on jobs.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's so interesting, I remember when I first moved to New Orleans, you would see reproductions of those beautiful labels for sale. You go into people's houses and they've framed them and put them on the wall. They're just a great local art form, aren't they?
Oh, they're beautiful. And like I said, I'm a graphic designer. I love typography. And that's what started me on this book, were the labels.
And the vibrant color.
Oh, yeah.
That's the other thing. And even the canned goods, the canned shrimp labels I thought were amazing.
Right. And that's sort of that I figured out. I think the most incredible fact I found out about while doing this book was that there were 1,200 factories and 900 different products being made in New Orleans in 1926. It was a manufacturing center.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah. And now, you know, we feel that America is not a manufacturing country anymore.
That's right.
So it's really timely and perfect to go back and look at this history. But you do include some very contemporary things as well.
Correct. I didn't want it to be one of those books that's just, oh, how great New Orleans was, and it used to be the capital of everything in the South, fashion, cotton, sugar, whatever, especially since Katrina. We've had all these young folks come in and start up, you know, these new startup companies like Jolie and Elizabeth. They've taken the seersucker thing that Haspel had started in New Orleans, and now they've turned it into a contemporary product.
Isn't that amazing?
It's great.
Keep reinventing.
That's right.
Oh, and you also drew on some other very well-known local writers to put this book together. Julia Reed wrote the introduction.
Right.
She loves all things New Orleans.
She does.
And Errol Laborde and Clancy Dubose provided introductions to the past section and the present section.
Correct. Yeah.
So did they come along and add things to the book, and do they have ideas for you too?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Both of them. I didn't know either one of them. I went to them and drug all my, at that point, it was just papers and layouts and such, and they signed on and did a great job for me.
So do you collect labels and things like this? Give me a picture of your studio.
A lot of flat files with a lot of old labels. A lot of the labels in this book I bought off of eBay. A lot of them came from Historic New Orleans Collection and Louisiana State Museum and collectors. There are a lot of people here in New Orleans that collect, you know, there may be one facet of New Orleans, beer or coffee or whatever, collect this stuff.
Wow. And you also have so many lovely vintage photographs. I thought that was really one of the pleasures of this book as well.
Well, thank God for the Library of Congress. If there's people out there, there are organizations out there that save this stuff for us.
Now, this is a big picture book. This is a heavy, gorgeous coffee table book. Where does your passion for making books like this come from? Because you really know how to do that.
Well, I've been a graphic designer for 40 years. I love visual stuff, and I love history. I don't claim to be a historian, but I love history and I love New Orleans.
What other books about New Orleans do you like besides your own?
I love the Mary Cable book, Lost New Orleans.
Yes.
I think that was the first book that I ever saw about New Orleans that I just went, wow.
And Somebody should reissue that. That's
they should. It is a beautiful book and a well-done book.
And what's next for you?
Well, I do have a book, you know, since I've got the three books, Missing, Making, and...
Mixing. You're big on the M's, aren't you?
Yeah. I have a book coming up, hopefully next year, that's called Marketing New Orleans.
Ah, that'll be fun.
Yeah. It's a visual history of how New Orleans has marketed itself and how other companies have used New Orleans as a backdrop to promote their products.
Oh, that'll be a lot of fun, Philip. And you made this book a family affair. What was it like to work with your daughter on a book like this?
It was wonderful. We spent almost 2 years working on it together. Now, she moved to France before the book was over, and we had a few problems with that because she had just gotten to Europe and couldn't find an internet connection.
So
she had to go to places like McDonald's in France and sit there all day and type and send me stuff.
We've been talking with the brilliant designer Philip Collier, whose beautiful new book is Making New Orleans Products Past and Present. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
One of the great successes in New Orleans children's books this year is a charming picture book called What the Sleepy Animals Do at the Audubon Zoo. It has two authors, Grace Millsaps and Ryan Murphy, and two illustrators, John Clark IV and Allison Kilday. And we are pleased to welcome Grace and Ryan to the Reading Life today. Hi, Grace.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Ryan.
How are you doing?
Great. So I'd like to think that you all were having a picnic in Audubon Park with your pals and said, oh, this would be great. We could do a book. So tell me if that's really how it went.
That's really not far from it. I teach preschool, or I was teaching preschool at the time, so I was reading a lot of children's books every day, obviously. And I came home one day and said, you know, I think we can do this. And Ryan said, okay, let's go for it. And at the time, he was really interested in doing an e-book because we just thought, that's the new thing to do. And so we were just talking to our friends, Allie and John, who just so happened to be graphic designers, but we really weren't like pitching them on this project. We were just talking about what we might do. And they were like, oh, it has been John's dream his whole life to illustrate a children's book. So then, yeah, that was in the park one day. And then we started talking more seriously about what it might be about. And it was born.
And John, that's John Clark IV, did a wonderful video about why he likes to draw animals, which is so much fun to see. So I hope people will look for that. And then, because you were doing it yourselves, you set about raising money on Indiegogo. So how did that work out for you, Ryan?
I mean, it was a great process. Allison, one of our illustrators, she got us up with a Facebook page months even before we were ready to do the campaign. And we were kind of loath to put our unfinished work out there, but it was a great idea. People just really love to see people trying to do something creative. It got a lot of momentum behind the project before we even got to the point of trying to raise money for that first print run. And we shot a video. We had our pitch. We came out with pretty much what was a finished product, just asking for help to do the printing. And people jumped on it really quickly, and it went really well.
So tell us a little bit about the storyline.
A little girl goes to the zoo, and she has a pretty good time, but a lot of the animals that she sees are sleeping. So she asks her dad why that is, and he doesn't know the answer, but he, you know, dad, so he's not short on trying to answer it. So he makes up this long story about how they're sneaking out of the zoo at night and stealing the zookeeper's keys and coming out of their cages and playing games and having parties and contests and eating food and dancing. And that's why when you see them during the day at the zoo, they're so tired because they've been up all night. And Renee, the little girl, she doesn't believe the story that her dad's told her, but dads have a way of being right about these things.
Or persuasive, at least.
Right.
The animals are so bright and wonderful. So tell us about, I love their liveliness. You know, you believe they're dancing. You believe they're sleeping. They're just so cute. So tell us about how you developed the style. You have to speak for your illustrators here a bit, I know.
Yeah, I mean, we came to John with a few ideas. You know, we think the pelican should be catering in their beaks, things like that. But he really took the text we gave him and took it to a whole new level. Thought of all kinds of jokes, really developed the culture and the world that these animals live in. And we were just so impressed when we got some of these spreads back. We had seen plenty of his art, but he really took everything up to a whole new level for him. And yeah, it's really far beyond what we expected when we got into this.
It gives a new meaning to party animal, as you said.
Absolutely.
Truly
absolutely.
Wonderful. Now, collaborating on books can be really difficult, even for just two people. But there were four of you. So how did that work out?
Well, we're married, so that lends a whole nother level of issues into this. But it's hard to get honest feedback on your work. And we're very close. We know where we stand with each other. And if one of us says to the other, I don't think this is a great idea, we know it's not an assessment of our relationship or the worth in the other person. And I think that leads to a better outcome in the end.
With Allie and John as well, I feel like they're like siblings to us now, where sometimes we have fun and sometimes we argue, but we know that we're still working through it and we're getting a better product in the end. Yeah.
I think as a self-publisher, you come to realize that there is just so much work to be done. There's no missing the fact that these publishing houses are huge and have a number of different people for a whole bunch of different roles. And having four people to help, you know, do your media stuff, get you on the internet, walk into retail outlets and say, I think you should carry this book, that requires a lot of manpower. And I think we're extremely lucky to have four people working on this project.
It takes a village, like we always say. So all four of you are recent New Orleanians, right?
I was born here, and my family is all from down here. So I'm very familiar with the place, lived here until I was five, but came multiple times a year. And we found our way back about 3 years ago.
And Grace, what about you?
Yeah, I'm from Georgia, and that's where Ryan's family moved when he left. So that's where we met. And then John and Allie are, well, Allison's from all over, but they've been in Alabama, and Allison went to school in Mississippi, so we're all around here.
Why did you choose to make your home here? What does the city offer you?
It was a very conscientious decision that we made. Our relationship began essentially in northern China. We debated going back there after I was finishing law school in Boston, thought about New York, thought about other places in East Asia, but in the end, we looked at the life we wanted to live. I felt I knew this place pretty well and knew that worst comes to worst, we would be happy living in New Orleans. Culturally, the city offers so much that you can't find anywhere else, and we've never looked back. The city has surely exceeded our expectations.
Oh, that's great to hear. So what's your next project?
Well, I've just written, it's like a children's board book, like will be printed in cardboard, so it's for very young children, and it teaches the colors using different snowball flavors. And Allison's going to be illustrating that one, so I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, that's great. And you've actually managed to do quite a bit of good with what the sleepy animals do at the Audubon Zoo, haven't you?
I mean, we've gone out to a lot of schools. You know, we've never charged for reading. We do a game show that's animal-themed when we go there, and it's a lot of fun for us. We're also donating a book for every branch in the New Orleans Public Library system, and we're donating a percentage of our proceeds from the first print run to the zoo, $1,000, which, you know, isn't much, but it's good for, you know, four people coming together with crazy ideas in the park.
Good for karma. Good Absolutely. For karma, too. So we've been talking with writers Grace Millsaps and Ryan Murphy, creators of the wonderful children's book, What the Sleepy Animals Do at the Audubon Zoo. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Here's what's on tap in the literary life this week. Linda Baletza signs Operation Mockingbird, Saturday, December 28th at 3 at Garden District Bookshop. And poet Sarah Henning reads from and signs her new book, A Sweeter Water, followed by an open mic Sunday, December 29th at 3 at the Maple Leaf Bar. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life is by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.